We did this in ISIN one time, not realizing that all the page numbers were different. All that great planning on my part was right out the window. For those who are unable to drink moderately, drug moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Stop right there. Now, one of my jobs as a sponsor, one of the things we're going to talk about this afternoon in one of these little sessions is some sponsorship stuff and working with others. One of my main jobs, like the first job, is...
The coolest things about the breaks, besides y'all get a chance to go smoke and pee, is that we get a chance to visit and talk a little bit. And it's like, you know, we're limited time here. We want to keep this short and sweet so y'all can have some day to do what you want to go do too. And we want to cover some stuff. Some of the questions, some of the things you're commenting on rings true, and I want to touch that real quick, and then we're going to fly through this hour. This is going to be a quick hour because we're going to talk specifically about the steps and some thoughts. Again, in case anybody came in late, a lot of you guys, I know somebody came in just for the food. And I don't have a problem in the world with that, but I'm here to share some experience with the steps and sponsorship and the program of recovery from my perspective, my point of view. Years working in the treatment center industry and years trying to get sober and not being able to get sober. So I get lots of emails from lots of people around the world, and a lot of you guys, I mean, you truly do share my story, same kind of story. We didn't all get to this fellowship and get well real quick, and some of us have really struggled. You know, if somebody's struggling because they just simply refuse to do the work, then okay, let's just get with it. But if somebody's struggling because they haven't been told all the information they need to get well, then shame on us as a fellowship. I know that sounds harsh, but there's this idea around our fellowships that if you're going to get well, you're going to get well no matter what you hear. That's just crap. I mean, that's just absolute rubbish. If you're the real McCoy and you want to get well, you better have the tools laid out in front of you and to know what to do. Why should some of us spend years suffering before we finally get to hear the solution? Everybody wants to let everybody off the hook, and I get a little tired of that. I think that there's a gazillion musts in the book, and there's some rigidity to it, and the closer you want to get to God, you're just going to have to do some things. I mentioned earlier about the little issue man pins. A lot of you guys want to talk about that and visits. A lot of you people in this room are on the same page with me. Y'all understand. I'm going to repeat myself one more time. I am not saying your issues are not important. You guys, you are so... some of you guys have been hurt and you've been traumatized deeply. And you believe that's who you are. And I'm so sad for you because that is not who you are. And if you want to continue to milk that crap until the day you die, go ahead. And you can be mad at me in the process, but it's going to block you from the sunlight of the Spirit till the day you die. God is not going to be able to use you unless you get through what's kicking your butt. And some of you guys, it's the alcohol and drugs, and some of you it's childhood trauma, and some of you it's abuse. And I'm not making light, and don't think for a second that I'm making light of any of that. It all needs to be addressed. But it's going to be addressed. Before you can help anybody else, you've got to get through it yourself. You follow? That's what the 12 steps will answer. If you don't think there's a God, I guarantee you, let's work the 12 steps and you're going to get there. Somebody took exception with my comments about depression. I'm going to tell you something, folks. The word depression elicits attention from people. Is it depression or is it self-pity? Because it looks a lot alike. Y'all with us on this one? Those of us that have suffered from real clinical depression in a fetal position underneath the bed, not being able to get out of the house, understand what that's about. Self-pity, you can just milk that just so long, and the people around you will say, you know what, why don't you go outside and feel sorry for yourself? Because we're sick and tired of listening to your crap in here. Go with us? That's all I'm saying. Self-pity is what kills alcoholics and addicts. The big book says resentment's the number one offender. Read on. What it says is, as it's disguised, as it comes out as, with most of us, self-pity. Make sense? And why I can see it is because I are one. I've got to tell you, I said I didn't have a tattoo. If you look under my shirt, like it's a big V, you know, big Vic. I'm the victim boy. Yeah? Y'all laugh. You don't know what it's like. The eye patch. And why do we do it? And why do we hang on to it? Because it worked. I can pull that line I guarantee you, if I did it in here, I could get the sympathy that I needed. I could borrow some money and get laid. I guarantee you. wouldn't be much money, and she probably wouldn't be real pretty, but... But why do we keep using the same old tried and true stuff? We do it because it works. Y'all with us? It's just like my first sponsor gave me permission to be happy. You know, it's okay to come into a meeting and shit. I mean, God, there's so many people I hear and talk to. Says, God damn, Chris, my life's on fire and I'm loving everything about my life. And I said, buddy, I heard you in the meeting and you didn't open a mouth. I said, buddy, I'm embarrassed to share how good it is. Oh, man, we have screwed up. We've gotten so far off the page it's not even funny. AA, CA, all of our 12-step fellowships should be a pep rally. We're not supposed to be a goddamn dumping ground for people's problems, a little junior therapy session, a pissing and moaning group. I mean, guys, life is tough enough. I want to come for an hour and hear all the cool stuff that's going on. The miracles that you guys are walking through, the illnesses that you're walking through, the financial stuff that you're walking through. You're coming out the other side. That's the stuff we're going to share with a newcomer and pull them with our vision. You can't share it unless you can get past it. That's all I'm going to say. Once I sit down with a guy and we talk to him and I get some parameters around him, we're not going to do a whole sponsorship deal, but I want to make sure I'm qualifying a guy. If the guy wants to get sober, I'm going to help him. If the guy has any inkling that he doesn't want to get sober, the big book calls it a lurking notion. Y'all know what, on page, I think it's 33 in the book, it says, if you've got a lurking notion that your case is different, then we need to talk about it. Because the lurking notion looks like this. I can stay sober for a while until I get off the medication and then I'm going to drink again. Well, I don't want to mess with you. Because if that's where you're going with this, I'm not going to take time. Well, if you don't work with him, he might die. That's fine, but he's going to die on somebody else's watch. He's not going to die on mine. I don't have time to mess with somebody that's not done. And it's not my job to make sure you're done. I had a call from a lady. I told this story. It happens all the time. She wanted me to come talk to her son. He says, I think he's ready to get sober. And I walked into his living room. And I said, little brother, you want to get sober? You done? You finished with the cocaine? You finished with the alcohol? You want to get sober? You want to try something different? Well, I'm not real sure. Come on. Left the room. Lady chased me out in the parking lot, pissed, mad. What kind of 12-step call was that? A successful one. I stayed sober and I didn't piss him off and didn't try to jam this down his throat. Make sense? This is a program of attraction. Me trying to talk him into getting sober ain't attractive. Y'all with us? That's why one of the little things I have to talk to you guys about in the next hour with a little big book thumper. You know, it's like sometimes we have a tendency to get a little rough with this big book. A lot of you guys in here, we know enough in this book to be dangerous. We walk in and somebody misquotes a page, you know. Well, and we eat their butts. You know, you're off the page and you know, rah, rah, rah. Man, the only thing we're doing is looking like idiots when we do that. We're not supposed to do that. Love and tolerance. Take them out back and beat them up. No, just... I'm just kidding. Okay. I wanted to show you something real quick. I was going through some archival stuff this summer. The guy that brought Alcoholics Anonymous to Texas was a guy named Larry Jewell. And in 1940, he started corresponding back with Ruth Hawk in New York. This little archival piece I have is just a compilation of correspondence between Larry and the first guys that started AA in Texas and New York with Bill Wilson and those guys. But this, in one of these letters, it was in 1940. Now remember, guys, this is a year after the Big Book was published in the first edition. In this letter, he says, I stuck to the principle. This is Larry Jewell talking. I stuck to the principle that this is strictly a spiritual business and did so against great odds, even to the extent of telling those who were inclined to diminish the importance of that principle that our group was not for them. Though they were welcomed as friends, we mean business. We aren't in this thing for fun. Damn! Oh, Larry was a thumper. But we think the message was all watered down because of the treatment centers. Everybody want to blame the treatment centers. But this is a long time before any treatment centers ever started up, 1940. But already, a year after the Big Book was published, they were already catching resistance to the spiritual solution. Because I'm just trying to say, guys, y'all get ready. Because in the trench, you're going to take some heat. If what you have to offer is a spiritual solution for alcoholism, and you understand that and you believe that, and you're telling somebody else something different, you better look at what you're doing. The steps were intended to help bring about a spiritual experience. Again, I've said it 1,000 times this morning, this is not a self-help program. Bill Wilson wrote, if you want to see a copy of this letter, it's in Asbel Sees It. He wrote this letter in 1966. That was 5 years before he passed away. The AA preoccupation with sobriety is sometimes misunderstood. Would y'all agree that in AA, do we have a misconception that this is all about just not drinking? I mean, you pick up any periodical, any piece of AA literature, and that's what it talks about. All you have to do is stay sober today. That's not true. That's not what this was about. Subsequent AA literature talks about that, but the big book didn't. Bill Wilson in 1966 knew it wasn't. To some, the single virtue seems to be the sole dividend of our fellowship. We were thought to be dried up drunks who otherwise have changed little or not at all for the better. Such a surmise widely misses the truth. We know that, here it is, we know that permanent sobriety can be attained only by a most revolutionary change in the life and outlook of the individual, by a spiritual awakening that can banish the desire to drink. If we as a fellowship in any of our are carrying a message that doesn't include that, we're off the page. And I know that some of you in here got sober without the spiritual experience. And I know you believe it's your right to carry that message to somebody else. But my concern is that you squeaked under the door, half measures, middle of the road, but you assume that the little guy next to you is going to be able to do the same thing. And I just get tired of it. We talked about it earlier. Everybody just wants to wring their hands. When you guys go out and kill yourself, jump off a bridge, get killed in a car wreck, we bury you, and then somebody sits back in the back, well, you know, the truth of the matter is that the little bastard just didn't want it. Well, wait a minute. Who was it that told him that all he had to do was just go to a meeting and everything was going to be okay? I can't fix you. I wish I could. God can fix you. That spiritual experience. Once I qualified a guy and I give him a case of alcoholism and drug addiction, and he's got a little tension around him. The first step experience is uncomfortable as hell. I hear people, oh, guess what, guess what? I'm an alcoholic. You're not there yet. I've been in the room when people were diagnosed with terminal cancer, you know, and you could just feel the air leave the room. That's a diagnosis of alcoholism and drug addiction, folks. And you're sitting in there, you get uncomfortable with this. You sit with it. It's not fun. And that's what propels you through the rest of the steps, is this discomfort around the first step experience. You with us? If you've got a lurking notion, guy comes back in after 9 months and he hasn't worked the steps. Well, I think I didn't make my amends properly. That's not it. You didn't understand first step. It's always about first step. Because if you understand first step, you'll do whatever it takes to make those damn amends. You with us? That one amend, you know, guys, that you're not going to make because nobody's going to ever find out about it anyway? The one you're going to drink over eventually? If you think you're really an alcoholic, making that amend will be like kissing a baby's butt compared to what you're fixing to face. Make sense? It's always about first step. Do I really think that I can get by without working the rest of these steps? Talked to a lady yesterday coming from Houston. She's been sitting on a four-step. I'm still working on that old four-step, giggle, giggle, but I'm going to get to it one of these days. I says, honey, you've been out of treatment 8 months. You had a nearly completed four-step when you left our hospital. And now 8 months later, you're still sitting on it. You're going to die. You think that you've got something to do with whether you drink or not. You follow? She thinks she's got a choice. Because she's been sitting on a stupid four-step. Well, I didn't understand it. I had questions about it. 8 months, you've had questions about it. And you didn't ask those questions? You understand? God. First step stuff is what we got to get. Second step, we ask the guy, are you willing to believe there's a power out there greater than yourself? 9 times out of 10, the guy says, yep, probably is. Next. Man, I go to these second and third step meetings and listen to you guys, and you just, that's all you want to talk about. Well, when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I hated God, and I didn't want anything to do with God. Shut up! Who cares? What we're killed. The book says over half of us didn't have a problem with God. You hear this? It says half of us did, half of us didn't. But we, to hear it in our meetings, everybody's had a problem with God. I'm eating out of dumpsters in 1976 in Houston, Texas, and I know damn good and well that God's there with me. But I can't stop drinking. Y'all understand? I didn't have a problem with that. So why are we going to waste any time talking about it? I want you to write a conception of what you think God is. If I have a problem, let's do that little exercise. If I don't have a problem, we're wasting time. Second step is one question. Do you believe there's a power out there greater than yourself? It's a yes or no question.
Well, damn it.
Yes. All right, let's go. Third step. Are you willing to make that power a part of your life? Are you willing to give some control over to this power? Because we've done such a great job ourselves. God. I mean, it's hilarious to sit with a newcomer and watch him try to justify why, you know, I mean, you've done such a great job. I mean, good heavens, I understand that. But can you imagine with the power of God with you? The book says in the chapter of the agnostics, lack of power, that's the dilemma. It doesn't say lack of power around the alcohol and dope. That's a part of it. Lack of power in all the areas of my life. Y'all with us? I'm going to move away from this. I want to point something out. You see that little word that says unmanageable? They're not talking about your external world. They're talking about what's going on inside. Let me ask you the questions we always do. How many of you guys drank and drugged when life was great? How many when it was really, really crappy? When you had lots of money? Not a pot to fit, yeah. Good looking girl. Yeah, no girl. Yeah, the kind you have to blow up. I know. And we all laugh about it, guys, but see, that's the deal. And so we all laugh about it, and we say, yeah, you know, that's right. Because the unmanageability that the book is talking about, the second step stuff, is and the lack of power, is about the unmanageability inside. You keep chasing that idea that everything out here is going to get... I can get sober if I can finally make some money. I can get sober if you finally marry me. You with me? I can get sober if we can finally have babies. I can get sober if we can just shoot those babies. I can get sober if we can just... I hear it all the time. Y'all with us? You're just always waiting on something else to change. The good news is, nobody out there has to change for you to get sober. The questions are this. Are you willing to let that power? But I don't know about that power. I don't know what that power looks like. Me neither. Answer the damn question. Well, but so many people got killed in the wars and the Christian. I didn't ask you if you wanted to be a Christian. I asked you if you were willing to believe in the power greater than yourself and willing to let that power help you stay sober. Yes or damn it, no. Well, I'm just not sure. Thank you, baby. Did you hear what you said? Move on. That's exactly what I did. No, go read this. No, go read that. No, let's talk about it tomorrow. Bye-bye. And some of you are irritated. Well, my sponsor worked with me for months on this. Good for you. And she missed 100 other drunks she could be working with while she was trying to baby you. You either want what we got or you don't. This is about the spiritual experience. Go follow? Some of y'all are getting so uncomfortable.
Oh, I love it.
When you have your spiritual experience that you're fixing to have because I pissed you off, you're gonna send me so much money. Okay. Third step prayer, we take them to him. We talk to him seriously. We look in page 62 with a new guy and we say, selfish and self-centeredness, that's the root of the problems. Are y'all with me? The root of the problem is not alcohol and dope. The root of the problem is that I'm selfish and self-centered to the core. You'll follow? Yes, people want to take exception with that. The bottles were the symptoms. The dope's the symptom. It's the selfish and self-centered. If I could just get out of my head, I could experience the beauty of this world. But I can't because I'm too... We're like a bunch of ingrown hairs. Not a pretty sight, is it? Okay. And then we look at the prayer on page 63. And we go over this little prayer with him, and I explain it to him. It says, God, I'm going to offer myself to you to build with me and do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self. You see it? There again, in the second page, it says it. Relieve me of the bondage of self. Not relieve me of the bondage of crack cocaine. Self is what's got me. That I might better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over those difficulties can bear witness to those I would help. You'll see what I'm saying? He's saying that all God's kids got troubles. And every one of us we're gonna let God take us to a different spot, and then we're gonna turn around and get our little butts back in a meeting, and we're gonna start sharing that in meetings. We're gonna start talking about it from the podium, about how cool life is in sobriety. Oh, listen, guys, because that's exactly what it's got to be. I listen to your stories when you come up afterwards, and we just get to hug necks, and I get to watch you walk through the Hep C and the treatments and the financial difficulties and the molestations and the rapes. Good, that's what God's going to do with us. He's going to allow us to bear witness to what happened in our lives. And all of you, you don't have to have a story like me or a story like you. You've got your own story. God's going to use it. That next hour, we're gonna talk about it. And that's all the book is trying to tell us, is that God's going to remove your difficulties so victory over those can bear witness to those that you're going to help. God, what a cool prayer. We find it desirable to do the spiritual step with an understanding person. Do it with whoever you want to. Do it by yourself if you have to. But the bottom line is, do it. Well, my sponsor had me get on my knees. That's great. Some people don't want to do that. I don't care. Say the prayer. Wording is optional. Y'all cool? Here's the key piece everybody wants to miss. I did a third step prayer. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action. First step is personal house cleaning. We get up off our knees from doing a third step prayer. We've given our life to God. Say, okay, buddy, what are we going to do with it? Now we need to do a little inventory and find out what we can discard. We need to move on. Get with the inventory. I was talking to a guy. I've talked to some of you about it. I was over in Seattle doing a talk, my talk was on a Saturday, and we went over to listen to this old geezer talk on a Friday night in this Indian reservation. He's passed away now. He was sober 40-plus years. Bill was his name. He was just the nicest old guy. But he talks about getting sober, and he talks about on his third day of sobriety, he's out there working in a logging clearing out there, and his sponsor drives up in an old car and hands him a notebook and says, it's time to start working on a fourth step. And there was 200 people in the room, and everybody just busted out laughing. You'd have thought he told the funniest AA joke on the world. And I'm looking at the guys I'm with, all little bumpers, and we're saying, what the hell's funny about that? It's exactly what we're supposed to do. Everybody has this misunderstanding, this misgiving about what the fourth step is about. Fourth step's an inventory, folks. Treatment centers want to drag this out. I've got an 80-page four-step guide on my desk right now. 80, I'd send it to you, but I couldn't afford the postage. Oh my God. Can you imagine a little fried pie coming back in, little blips all burn up on a crack pipe and all just nutcase, and you drop an 80-page guide? Well, here, let's get started on this fourth step. You know, just forget it. I'm going to go drink. This is nuts. It's an inventory. It's supposed to be done on the... You could do it on a couple of little pieces of paper. Y'all follow? The guy that has 10 resentments is going to do a successful inventory. The guy that has 200 resentments, that's fine. But guys, we got to get serious about this. You say a little prayer, say, God, show me who I'm pissed at. I can do this. I can do this. And then you write their names down. I haven't even thought of some of these people in 30 years. You're not pissed at these people. Why are you writing this? What, this is not an exercise in writing. I want to see the current stuff. The job. You with me? The people at work. AA. I want to see some names on there that we can dig our teeth in. I don't know what. My second grade coach. Oh. Y'all know what the term couch broke means? It means it's too deep in therapy. And everybody's out to get me. And my second grade coach. And I've been carrying it for 50 years. You're a pussy. Now you can put me on the inventory. Let's move on. We ever had more time, we could do this, because it takes a little time, and I'm not going to spend the intricacies in it, but it's pretty simple. I make a list of the people I'm pissed at. Second column, why am I pissed at these people? And I got to be honest about it. If I lie in the second column, I'm going to lie in the last column. That's the way it works. Got to get honest. Third column, there's pages on there that shows you areas that are affected by my resentments. You with us? These actions. Fourth column, I'm looking at my part. All those inventories just help me see my part so I can get free of this victim crap. You with us? I don't want to hear one single question about that. Well, what about me? I was molested. Listen, let me tell you point blank. I'm not saying that you caused it. I'm saying if you can see your part in it, how long did you carry that without telling anybody? 30 years? That's your part. Bless your heart. Move on. We're not going to spend any more time on that than we are with the next door neighbor that keeps getting your newspaper. No, I'm not making light of that. I'm saying this is not therapy. We're making a list of, you with us, of the resentments. Also, I'm going to make a point. Seems to be a misconception that we don't put our name on there. The book tells me to put my name on the list. My inventory, it says sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves. Some of you guys, you're your own worst enemy. You can't see the sun out of the spirit because you're too busy beating your own self up. And you need to get to a spot where you stop resenting yourself. You're going to do that the same way you're going to stop resenting your ex-husband. You're going to put his damn name in the first column and do this inventory work. It's the most freeing, fun thing you'll ever do. But we paint this picture in all of our fellowships that it's a joke. You go into any meeting tonight and say, I'm working on a fourth step, and everybody will go, oh. That was torture. I worked on mine for 6 years and then I... Is it any wonder that nobody wants to attack it? You follow? It's something to be done quickly, guys. When I'm sponsoring a guy, I've got to get him in there. We're going to get up from the third step prayer. I'm going to hug his neck. I'm going to give him instructions on how to do a fourth step. And I'm going to walk him straight through it and say, oh, by the way, a week from today, we're doing your fifth step. Period. Well, I don't think I can do it. Well, this started out well, but it's ending bad. I'll see you later. Y'all understand? I'm not going to give him time to sit there and stew in this. We watch hundreds and thousands of you people relapse around the fourth step. Why? Because some sponsor that doesn't have time to mess with you anyway is letting you swim in your own juices. Don't let them stew in that stuff. We're going to make a list. We're going to look at this stuff. I'm going to help them see their part in the fourth column. They're going to get free. We're going to do a little two-column fear inventory. Why do I got the fear? And why do I think I got it? It's because I'm dependent on something besides God. That's why. I'm going to look at my sex inventory. Sex inventory, guys, there's 9 questions in there to answer around my relationships with the opposite sex. You with me? My relationship with you. If I'm doing a proper fourth step, I could sit down and do a fifth step with you, including my sex inventory, and you would never blush and I would never blush, because I'm talking about my behavior towards women, and it ain't got jack to do with pokey pokey. Everybody thinks that this fifth step is about confession. It's not. Fifth step is a piece of its confession. I need to tell you some secrets that I'm keeping. You with me? But that's not all it is. Make sense? How do I treat women? See, guys, I'm sitting down to a fifth step and they get all excited. Oh, goody, now let's do the sex inventory. We're done here, thank you. We're finished. If you wrote that crap down the way you treated God's kids and you're excited about talking about it, we are so not on the same page. Bye-bye now. You follow? Real simple, direct. Takes you a week to knock it down, finish it. Guys, if you forget something on this and God brings it, God says He will constantly reveal more to you. 6 months down the road, if you want to do another little fourth step, fifth step, and a year, I do one once a year and do multiple fifth steps. I sit down and do a fifth step with you and you do a piece with me and then we go to you and do one. The more people I get to know and allow them to know me, the freer I get. You follow? We got a bunch of you in here walking around on pins and needles because you're still afraid somebody's going to find out about that bad stuff. Get free. You follow? Everybody thinks everybody's going to run screaming from the room when we start reading. Sponsor's prayer is this. Keep me awake. And God, please, if it's not too much trouble, let me hear something different. Oh, my gosh. All right. We dump that old fifth step. While you're doing a fifth step, I've got a piece of paper lined out, and I've got an 8-step list on there, and I've got a 6-step list. You with me? I usually got it on a divided piece of paper. So what we're going to do is, it says an hour later, we're going to get quiet with God, and we're going to go back over the first proposals. We're going to make sure the stones are in place, blah, blah. Y'all know the drill. What we're going to do is we're going to get quiet, we're going to look at this business, and then we're going to go to God in 6 and 7 and ask God to remove the character defects. We got a character defect list from the deal. As you're telling me what you're doing, resentments, I'm writing it down. Jealous, selfish. Anytime you're judging somebody, you're being selfish. You follow? It's just that simple. I think I know how the world's supposed to be. I'm fearful, greedy, and I'm jotting them down, you know. And I'm going to use that. And then while you're making this list, while you're telling me your fifth step, I'm writing a little list of my own about the people I think you might owe amends to. Because you're telling me the people you hate. Trust me, usually if you hate somebody, you've done something to... You need to clean up your stuff. You know, so I'm writing this down. We got a beginning 8-step list by the time we finish that fifth step. Cool? Hour later, we do 6 and 7. Guys, God removes the character defect. I become willing. I need to know what I'm looking at. You follow? But this stuff coming back in the meetings, the guys, I said, I'm working on 6 and 7. I'm working on 6 and 7. Jiminy. It's 2 paragraphs. What do you practice being an asshole? I mean, I don't understand. I've seen some deficiencies, and I'm willing to go to God for those. I ask God to remove them. You with me? I get up. I've got my 8-step list. I sit down with my sponsor again, and I'm gonna, my little sponsee. We're working together. I'm going to help you organize your amends. We're going to look at all the amends. Which ones can we do now? Which ones do we need to put off for a couple of weeks, days? I don't know. Whatever. Initially, now everybody wants to But what we want to do is we want to make our first approach. We got cats in this room right now that have been sober a lot of years and still have financial amends they're not making. And I know that because it's frustrating because a lot of us are in debt and we can't go write a big old fat check. That's what I want to do. Here's your $20,000. But you know what? When it push come to shove, that old boy that I owed the money to, he would take $10 a week until it got paid off over nothing. But I've hid from him for 3 years because I was unwilling to do that. You follow? You want the results of the amends? Make your first approach. And then don't back down from it. If you tell that credit card company you're going to send them $5 a month, send them $5 a month. And you go hungry before you don't send them $5 a month. It's my job as a sponsor is to help you organize your amends so we can start making those damn things. It's not an option. I watch people relapse around these all day long. You follow? Talking to a buddy of mine the other day, had a position open for him. This was the job he'd been looking for forever and ever. He's 7 years sober, and we sat down with it like this. He called me right before I left to get on the plane. He called me and says he got turned down for the job. There was one little chicken shit piece of stuff on his record that he knew about and didn't clean up. Why? Because he didn't think anybody would ever find out about it. This was a high security job. They knew about it. And it cost him a job. You follow? Now he's pissed. Wah, wah, wah. I needed that job. Didn't God know he... Wait a minute. Who made a conscious choice to look the other way in this little piece of dishonesty? I got to tell you something, folks. You do something to the world over here, it's going to come up and bite you in the butt over here. The old expression is what goes around comes around. You kick at the universe, it kicks back. Some of you wonder why you're so unlucky. Because you put some stuff out there. You want to start cleaning it up? Some good stuff will start coming back around. And I know there's a bunch of you in here that do not believe that, that think that's just hokey. I've seen it too many times. Make sense? Start cleaning up the universe. I'll tell you the way I do it. With these amends, we could talk 2 hours about this, but I was in the food business and it harmed a lot of people. Waitresses. Busboys. And I'm a cook, and I've got the reins. And so you bring me beer, alcohol, whatever. Your orders get, you don't. Some of y'all are waitresses, y'all know me. I'm sorry. But that's just it. I worked with thousands of waitresses in my 15 years in the food business. There's no way I could go make personal amends to those. Some of those people I could make because I kept them as friends. I knew them. And I made amends for my boorish behavior. But the truth of the matter is today, I make a standing point until the day I die to make amends to waitresses. If I go into a restaurant and I don't have enough money for the food and the tip, I don't go into the restaurant. And I ain't talking about some little measly clink clink tip. I'm talking, that's here in Canada, that's real money, isn't it? When you do it. That's heavy stuff. First time I came to Canada for a CA deal like that, they were passing the basket and they were dropping in. I said, bunch of cheap bastards. They're dropping loonies and toonies, and I'm thinking, I didn't know they were worth money. I thought it was just... But I'll tip to a fault, and I guarantee you, if a waitress, somebody, cook, gives me some food that I don't like, I'll just sit there. It drives my wife crazy. Why don't you send it back? Nope, because it'll take that waitress's time, it'll make her uncomfortable, and it's not her fault. She didn't cook it. I'm just not going to eat it. Make sense? You think, well, that's stupid. No, it's a way I can set the universe straight. Sooner or later, you're going to stop hurting people. Sooner or later, you're going to stop hurting people. I'm going to make these amends. Then I'm going to practice. While I'm making these amends, I'm going to practice the disciplines of 10, 11, and 12. You'll follow? 10-step stuff is this accountability piece. Guys, it's just not that complicated. On a daily basis, I'm going to sit down and I'm going to look back over my day. I do it in the morning or I do it at night, and I'm going to see, where have I been selfish and dishonest and fearful? Where am I off the page? Have I harmed anybody? Did I cuss too much? Did I get too snippy with the guy at the screener at the airport? You'll follow? Did that a few weeks ago, you know? Sat down and did it. The next day I was back in the airport. I made a point to go find him. He was on break. He said, this guy wants to talk to you. I went in there and I apologized for getting snippy with him. He was just doing his job. You follow? Oh, Chris, what difference does it make? He probably didn't even remember you. He, trust me. He remembered me. And also remembered the fact that I came and made amends, and I was a good example that day of what Alcoholics Anonymous was about. I'm going to say it again, guys. We've got to stop stirring up the universe. Stop kicking up the mud. We're going to do this on a daily basis when we see it. The book says when we were wrong, we promptly admitted it. What does the word promptly mean to y'all? Well, I'll pick it up when I do an inventory in 6 months. No, it means now. By my bed, I always keep a little piece of paper and I write this stuff down. And the next day I go and I clean up the wreckage of my past. So I'm not carrying all that crap around with me on a daily basis. You follow? Send somebody an email. It comes across, you know how emails sometimes, they misunderstand what you say in an email? And it happens to me all the time because I'm pretty short, quick anyway. Y'all send me an email, y'all do it all the time. Y'all send me just page after page of emails and I, you know, walk on, but dude, love XO Chris Raymer, send. I just don't have time to answer that kind of an email, you know, except I'm proud of you, go get them, you know. Email me back, you know, you were offended because I didn't answer every little stupid thing that you made a comment on. But now I got to go clean it up, and I take care of that. That's what we do. Prayer and meditation. Guys, we work the 12 steps so that we can get a conscious contact with God. All clear on that? So if we're not getting quiet with God on a regular basis, what the hell are we doing? I can't tell you how many people I work with when I ask them about their 11th step prayer stuff. I ask them, where do you pray? Do you have a place in your house that you can go to and be quiet where the stupid dogs aren't eating you and the kids are not around? You know what I'm saying? A little place where maybe you can read some of your spiritual literature or just get quiet with God for a few minutes. It's amazing to me how many people don't have that. Where do you go to pray? Well, out in the garage. Why? Well, I don't want my wife seeing me. Oh, this is going to be good. Let me see if I can get this straight. You're begging God on a daily basis to keep you sober and give you the power to do life and make you some money and make you successful and keep you healthy, but you're ashamed to let her know you're praying. Oh, God loves this. It swallows like the one that says, where do you meditate? Oh, in the morning, you know, doing my business. You know, I'm in the bathroom and I got to get quiet. Oh, that's... God's going to appreciate you went out of your way for that little quiet moment. I pray and meditate when I'm driving. Yeah, so you're the guy driving 6 miles an hour out there in the center lane. Come on. Get quiet with God. Turn the stupid TV off. Get the iPod out of your ear and get quiet with God. It's in the stillness that we get to hear God's word. Hey, double amen. But see, here's the problem. A bunch of you in here are not hearing God's word and you're pissed about it. But you're blocking you from that guidance. You guys come up to the hospital. I'm talking to my case manager. I don't know what to do about my marriage. You know what? She don't know either. She's never walked a day in your shoes. Y'all follow? You want to go answer shop. You want to go answer shop with everybody in the area. What do you think I do? What do you think I should do? I'm not saying don't bounce it off people. Go ahead. But ultimately, the answer is going to come from God. You hear this? Every time I do this, guys, I do dozens of these a year talking about the steps. Every time somebody will come up, I promise you, come up and say, yeah, like right, like God's going to tell you what to do. Like, you know, like give you instructions. Like, yeah. God, of course. That's exactly what Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob were talking about. We need a spiritual experience. We need to get connected. You read the 10th step promises. It says we're going to be placed in a position of neutrality, safe and protected. We've not even sworn off. Instead, the problem has been removed. How cool is that? Some of this power starts to flow in and you start to see that this is about... You think this is all about happy. You know, some of us are just going to be miserable. Have a nice life. I don't know what to tell you. You seem to have this all figured out. You've got it all in your mind of exactly how it's all going to play out. God's not going to bring you any money. He's not going to straighten out your credit. He's not going to help you in the health department. You're just shit. Talking about contempt prior to investigation. But you got to get quiet. You get quiet with God, guys, and you work these other steps, you're going to get some guidance. Don't try this prayer and meditation business until you get all this other stuff cleaned out. Bible talks a lot about it. Don't go to me and talk to me about stuff you need when you've got hate for a man in the rooms. Make sense? You can't hate a person on this earth and expect to be spiritually connected. It's not going to happen. The audacity about that. I need to sum it up by just saying this. This program is not about justice. And we got entirely too many people in AA expecting this to be about justice. This is about mercy. Thank God it's not about justice. This room would be empty. We would be gone. I don't like gay people. You know what? You need to get straight with that. You need to get your mind around this. You cannot appreciate the lifestyle, but you can't be harboring ill feelings towards another entity. You think you're spiritually connected as a bigot? You're not. We sit in AA and we allow it to happen day in, day out. Make sense, guys? In prayer and meditation, the disciplines, every day I get quiet and I look at my life. Every day I spend a quiet time with God, prayer and meditation. One of the guys in my sponsorship lineage, a guy named Paul M. up in Chicago, and he spends 45 minutes, an hour in the morning, 45 minutes, an hour at night meditating. Some of us have full-time jobs, we can't afford to do that much, but he's on the right track. And I got to tell you, his life is golden because he spends quiet time with God. You will know what to do. Am I supposed to go back to school? Am I supposed to move to Texas? You ugly guys, stay here. We have enough of you already down there. No, see, but I don't know. But I do know if you get quiet, God will start showing you. The other discipline, of course, is the piece that we don't talk about near enough, and that's working with others. And Bill Wilson is crystal clear about this business, about working with others. It's not an option. I want to read something to you, and then we're going to take a quick break and we'll finish up, because we're going to end up asking some questions and we'll run over that hour. I want to show you something on page 14 in the book. Bottom of page 14, top of page 15. I'm going to take a chance and pray that I don't scald somebody by reading this, because I don't want to do that. Bottom of page 14, this is in Bill's story. Eddie Thatcher, the little guy that 12-stepped Bill Wilson, he's talking about this. Roland Hazard snagged Ebby from the streets, took him to his house, worked him through the 12 steps. Then it was 6 steps, but the rudimentary spiritual principles, which was originally was first century Christianity. It was just get off your butt and go help somebody, basically what it was. And he worked these steps, and Ebby got caught fire. Within a few weeks, he went and found Bill Wilson. You with us? He didn't sit down at the Alano Club and play dominoes and wait for the drunk to come in the door. You know, he went and looked for a drunk to work with because he knew he had to. Here's what it said. My friend, he's talking about Ebby, had emphasized the absolute necessity of demonstrating these principles in all my affairs. Particularly was it imperative to work with others as he had worked with me. You see that word imperative? It means you've got to do it. Faith without works was dead, he said, and how appallingly true for the alcoholic. For if an alcoholic fails to perfect and enlarge his spiritual life through work and self-sacrifice for others, he could not survive the certain trials and low spots ahead. If he did not work, he would surely drink again. And if he drank, he would surely die. Then faith would be dead indeed. With us, it is just like that. Did you get it? He's saying if you want to grow spiritually, you've got to go work with others. We got too many people. I tell you, one of the big things in Texas down in the Bible Belt, we got a lot of people coming into AA. And a lot of these guys will start realizing that actually we're going to ask you to do something in here. And so they say, you know what? This is all spiritual in nature. I'm just going to go back to my church. And I think it's a great idea. I think all of us should go back to our roots if that's what we want to do. Go back to church. But you're still going to have to go work with a drunk. And if you don't work with a drunk, go work with an old person. If you don't work with an old person, go find you a sick one to work with. But you're going to do something to get out of your head. And it's not an option. This is why a lot of people don't stay sober in the church, because they go on Sunday morning, they drop a 20 in the basket, and they say, well, I've done what I'm supposed to do. No. No. Work through self-sacrifice. See, the cats that put this together, that did all the legwork, are going to be blessed from that. Not just the obvious way they get to stay sober. There'll be some other blessings attached. The people that sat back there and made coffee all day long. The people that are end up cleaning the damn toilets after we leave from this place. The people that work self-sacrifice for others, they're the ones that are going to get blessed. But we paint this picture in Alcoholics Anonymous that this is some kind of an option. It's not. That's what we got to talk about in the next hour. Y'all go smoke. We'll be back here.